whenever. So anyway, there's sort of two kinds of hyperbolic dreaded 3+1 systems, as you heard in the last talk. I'm one of these idiots who works on nonlinear this and that. But okay. So first, I wanted to put out. Let's see. I wanted to put out a fire. Now let's see. Do I have a pointer? Thank you. My boy always knows these things. Maybe that's why he's the head of an institute. There were a couple of things that I wanted to point out. Some of you know from last year when I was here, but I don't believe this has gotten around as much as it should, and I think it will indirectly affect, or even directly affect, the hyperbolic formulation. And the one of which I'm the proudest, I suppose, is that I wrote the Bianchi identities as a first-order symmetric hyperbolic system, which, if you will look at the Bianchi identities anywhere, it's not a hyperbolic system. And turns out that Madame Choquet had, of course, done it for the matter part of the problem in another way in earlier days. Is that right, Yvonne, with the collaborator? So, but anyway, she very kindly left this for me to do. And so the gap in the thing about if the constraints are true and the equations of motion hold, then the constraints continue to hold, of course, has a yawning gap in it, and that is that the equations you use to prove it don't have any domain, don't have any differentiability, don't have any particular anything. And one of the most fun things I ever did in my life was to give it the first time I found this, and Arthur Fisher was sitting in the back row. And if you've read Fisher and Marsden's chapter that competes with Yvonne's and mine, not very well, but it competes. Now it's quite a learned article. But when they go through the part, everything is learned, man. When they go through the part about conservation of the constraints, you have to get out your magnifying glass to read it because there's nothing there. And when I said this, Arthur screamed from the back row, "What?" And so if C is the constraint, all normalized, and so that if you multiply by root G, it really is the usual Hamiltonian constraint, or if it's added to the matter part, you write this, you use this identity, these are the IJ components of space-time tensors, 0, 0, all these are space-time tensors. It doesn't matter about the metric because we're using an orthonormal base in which the shift is hidden. And, pardon? Yes. Okay, how about if I stand like this? Okay, and then... Oh, I should know what's on here anyway. Then you get this beautiful system whose characteristics are the light cone, which show you what I think we always believed, that if the initial data were solved in some domain on an initial surface, then for sure they should be conserved in the domain of dependence. There should be a domain of dependence in which they're conserved that's determined by the past light cones of the future points of that surface. And since this can include matter, I think this closes, as I remember one time Bob gave a good talk on closing a hole in the uniqueness theorem, black hole uniqueness theorems, the Israel thing. I believe this closes a hole that needed closing in our understanding of Einstein's theory. Now, the reason, and obviously you can do it for the stress tensor, which is what Madame Choquet did. Now, the whole point here is, of this little part, is that the Ricci tensor, the space component of space-time Ricci tensor, the space components of the of the space-time Einstein tensor being zero are simply not equivalent statements. And so this has some interesting consequences, in which I kept saying for many years, as much as I admire Charlie Misner and the rest of them, G dot and K dot system is not the ADM system. The reason is that if I'll show you on the next page, the second statement, which is related, is that the harmonic time slicing condition doesn't have to be zero here. This was observed by Helmut some years ago, and so you can write it out as an equation. And this d0 hat means it has the time derivative minus a transport term that's the lead derivative along the shift, where f is an arbitrary function, which you can choose to be the time derivative of the log of an arbitrary function. You can solve it. And here we get something that's been seen, but I think not fully appreciated. It's something like what Charlie did in his omega time at mini superspace in early days. It is Madame Choquet used this and called it algebraic gauge with a special condition on alpha, which actually you don't need. Claudio used it in his functional integral for quantum gravity with no comment. And Abai used it to get his Hamiltonian constraint in the new variables down to a lower order polynomial, which, of course, what this does for ADM is it makes the Hamiltonian rational instead of irrational, which is not as good as polynomial, but still, it's very interesting. Now, a byproduct, which I'm not going to go over today, but I do hope to find you banging at my door tomorrow, is that if, since N is that alpha is the variable, I'm going to assert now that alpha is the variable that should be freely specified. Because if you specify it, you can always, and know the square root of g, you can always find the lapse, and you can specify it freely. So I claim that you shouldn't scale such a variable. According to the old ancient ideas that only Larry will remember about scaling variables in the initial value problem, but it gives, and I don't know if you've read this, Larry, but it gives a form of the initial value problem when there's no tensor splitting anywhere. It's complete solution. And I mean, the referees went bananas because they really hated the tensor splitting, and I really loved it, but, well, anyway. So that's an interesting consequence, which is really little to do with... Okay, now, the thing I want to comment about, and with no malice of forethought, is that in the 3 plus 1 equation of the ADM action principle, if we just sketch it, instead of writing N alpha analogously to what Abai did, you just write alpha times a double-weighted Hamiltonian, and then when you vary, you fix G, beta, and alpha. But the great thing about it, and probably it's been noticed in his formalism, but I had never noticed it, was that the pi dot equation, the momentum equation, then comes without a constraint term in it. Now, the ADM equations have a constraint term in pi dot. Now, I would like to see you reduce that to first order symmetric form. That's very difficult. So it's got the scalar curvature in it. And it's not the same as writing down the definition of pi in terms of k and differentiating it and substituting in from the regular k formulas. It's just not the same formula. But if you vary it this way, it is exactly the same formula. It's just Rij equals zero. And it's the same thing that appears in the Bianchi identity. So I just wrote the standard equations for no particular reason. But I hope if you would think about that, and I hope you'll be able to see that that's a very important thing apart from all these applications that people are making, for just understanding that now the slicing function, or whatever we were going to name it today, weren't we, Matt? What are we going to call it? We have to agree on a name, because then we'll make a dictionary, okay? So what's a good name? Tebow, what's a good name? Alpha. Alpha is used for everything. N with an under tilde. Well, that seems to be a familiar one. We'll think of it. I'll go around and ask people what they think. Yeah, I call it that, but we need a symbol for it. Okay, well, Larry's good at thinking of symbols. So anyway, that's the result of that. Now, all those things tied together because now alpha, I'll call it for now, the slicing function and the shift vector are now completely arbitrary. Whoops. And they can never spoil a hyperbolic system. So if you write down your hyperbolic equation, and as all of us first did, you find that you have to pick a harmonic alpha lapse or something like that. Well, actually, you're mistaken. I mean, all you have to do is make this substitution with alpha a known function, and density weight minus 1. So be careful when you differentiate. But if you do, you've never found any problem, and it never spoils hyperbolicity, and neither does the shift. So there you have four free functions for the space-time for changing, just moving the surface and shifting the coordinates. And I think that's rather a nice thing. So now passing on to some aspects of hyperbolicity, and not too many, right? Hyperbolicity, we want to give data at least on a partial Cauchy surface and either hook it on, get the radiation, no incoming radiation boundary condition from Abrahams and Evans's algorithm, or from the better, if we could make it work, the null thing. This would be ideal. I'm not able to solve that problem at the moment, or maybe at any moment. Now, I should point out that I'm talking about first-order systems. There's Madame Choquet's first and glorious analysis of the second-order Einstein equation, and the Fisher and Marsden put it in first-order symmetric hyperbolic form using hyperbolic coordinates. So I believe, unless Helmut corrects me, I believe that's correct, that they were the first. But I'm not sure, because he's corrected me a number of times, and I'm willing to believe him. He's not saying anything. So he's either angry or happy. I don't know which. Sir?
I think you are correct.
Why, thank you, Helmut. Don't push it in. Okay. All right. Now, there are two types of curvature hyperbolic systems. There are actually three types, which differ in detail. Helmut constructed one, starting with the Weyl tensor. And it's very elegant. But in using the Weyl tensor, one has automatically put the Ricci tensor equal to zero. And after you study a lot of these rather complicated curvature systems, which is not what most of you are going to be using on the computer at first, but nevertheless, you don't want to assume the answer or anything about the answer or the class of spacetimes that could be the answer at the first step. So the difference is that Madame Choquet and I just write down the Bianchi identity, first Bianchi identity contracted, without any assumption about the Ricci tensor being zero. Then, just for this notation is not too important, but we replaced the Riemann tensor by another tensor to remind us that this isn't the Riemann tensor anymore as now. Later, it will become the Riemann tensor again, and I apologize to those of you who've heard me say in the same emphatic way that that's the case. Well, then we use this trick of Louis Bell. Yes, thank you, Bill. This is the French comma to separate the antisymmetric pairs on the Riemann tensor. Thank you very much. It's a little bit helpful in these calculations because the way you take duals is not totally obvious. There's one you have to take backwards or the thing just doesn't work. First time Yvonne showed me her part of the calculation of this, I said, but surely this is wrong. And she just smiled at me and said, well, why don't you check it? But nevertheless, that just made us even. Because when she first came to Princeton in 1973, Wheeler invited her to visit. But really, he came to get her to check and see if I knew what the hell I was doing. And I knew that. And so about the third day, she said, the symbol of this operator is not, it's not an elliptic operator. It doesn't have an injective symbol. And I said, oh, I believe it does. And she said, no, no, it can't. She came back a half an hour later and said, it does, you're right. So I considered this one up. Okay, we're even. Okay? You don't remember. How could you not remember? Yeah. Oh, but you were. Yeah, well, anyway, it was fun because I sat there waiting for you to come back. I'd done that thing so many times, and it was within my reach, so it was not hard. Okay. Now, to construct this system, we've constructed by taking various duals on those antisymmetric indices, right, on A, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and created an E, B, a D, and an H. And this is wasn't our idea, but Yvonne cleverly saw that it was the right, well, it was a good way to do things. Certainly you can do it another way. Now you have to also take care of the variables, the space connection and K. And so this part really gets subtle, and I don't know that it's actually written down absolutely correctly anywhere but in my notebook. But the reason was, well, of course, wherever you see N, you're to think of the alpha substitution for N. But it turned out that it's very easy in writing this thing out, where you have an A symbol, to implicitly assume it's going to be the Riemann tensor anyway. I might as well use the Riemann symmetries. And that ruins it. Totally ruins it. So I have a correct copy, which I'll make a photocopy of if anybody's interested. But anyway, the point is, in this system, you now define this row U, and you take the Einstein equation and write it out using the Bianchi identity. But actually not R mu nu equals zero. And you just express R mu nu in terms of various contractions and so forth of A, and you pretend like you don't know what it is. And after some learned studying under the master who is sitting in the room, we find that the system, being first order symmetric, involves, well, first place it has a higher derivative, so it involves a little more initial data. So you have to give the correct takeoff for K. So you give K dot according to the ordinary Einstein equations, which you just pretend came floating down from the heavens. And then you refer it to another system, another higher order hyperbolic system, which I haven't written down, but which Schuylkill Brewer Rugeri and Schuylkill Brewer York studied, and that system has the same initial data as this system, has a unique solution, and from that you can parlay that this big system has a unique solution and can only be a solution of Einstein equations. So in fact, and you can go a little farther and show you can lose no solutions to the Einstein equations in the differentiability class that comes, which is a Sobolev space of some sort. Now what is the, I could just go on forever because this thing has lots of glorious properties, and only a few of us, including Helmut and Yvonne and Greg and Mark and all the true believers at Cornell, have done all these nasty calculations, and they've improved a lot of these formulations and probably will improve them further. But this is sort of all I know. Now, the next thing to do is to say, well, there are lots of other hyperbolic systems or purportedly hyperbolic systems in the literature recently. And there's a long list. And I promise on the view graphs that I hand to Matt that this list will be there. And I don't even know if it's complete, but it's really long. But the interesting thing is there are two kinds of hyperbolic systems that have been considered seriously other than the classic one of Madame Choquet and our third order one, which was sort of an intermediary in our thinking. So amongst first-order symmetric systems, we have really only curvature-based systems and systems based on G dot, K dot. And then everybody throws up his hands and said, how can this be? If that were true, we would have solved this problem. Larry and I would have solved this problem. But it isn't true that it's hyperbolic. And we made a lot of progress. And in some cases, it just happens to be harmonic and hyperbolic, for example, a cylindrical wave. So Steve Perron went around a long time making a lot of noise about a perfect solution, but it was first-order symmetric hyperbolic just by the grace of God. So what we need to do is... what we need to do is remember what we were going to say next. Well, I'm always an honest fellow. Where, what was I leading out to, Larry? Huh? Oh, excuse me. Of course. Okay, there's a whole bunch of them. I'm sorry, but... Thank you, Helmut. It's also true that I almost went insane flying out here reviewing everything I've read and done on hyperbolic theory in the last 4 or 5 years. And so you want to use something like G dot, K dot, and then you look at it and it's not hyperbolic, so you need to introduce another variable. Well, this is the approach used by Bona, Massa, etc., Seidel and Suen, and Stella, right? And Fratelli and Royla. And please don't let me forget anybody, but they're all on this list. But they all look different because they're all ugly. Because What did you say? No, I'm sorry. This is like saying, this is like saying impression. Sunrise is not a beautiful picture. Soleil, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's beautiful and nobody can dispute it. Right? Okay. And so anyway, everybody uses all these different variables, and it's obvious that one of them has to be like a Christoffel symbol, pardon the expression. But if you use that, it doesn't work. And if you look at it a long enough time, I showed it to Madame Choquet, and she flipped through it and said, "Bleh." She didn't like it. She said, "This is too ugly." You did. No, I mean, I give you all the credit in the world, but I remember it. I walked into the office and I said, "I really think we ought to check these claims." And you said, "It's too ugly." It's all right. Anyway, we found a combination of gamma symbols whose dot completes G dot, K dot, and thingamajiggy dot into a first-order symmetric hyperbolic system, and it's not using curvature, which I think is the ultimate thing to use, because when you use curvature systems, the characteristic fields are curvatures. They're the things LIGO will measure. In this system, it doesn't, but it's simpler. It has a fewer number of variables, and I will go over it more. So you have the spirit, and it is in print. It's in the Physical Review letters, and even if you don't read journals anymore, I would suggest you read that. And now I think Mark will make a remark or two, just generally like I did, that's been improved to some extent, and we'll discuss it further Thursday, okay?
Maybe.
Huh?
Maybe improved. Not
yeah. But I did time good.
But if you see the whole system worked out, it is longer, there's no question. And there's no question that this is Einstein's theory, the way it should have been written, in terms of the curve. That's just an opinion.
Yeah, I guess that's an opinion. But I mean, the question is whether anybody has an idea.
Well, the Cornell
theory. There's one practical answer to the question. In one particular case,